This podcast is about your future. What if the next years of your life can be the best years of your life? When full-time work becomes optional, you'll have the time to do all the things you've always wanted to do, if only you had the time, and soon you will. But to make the most of it, you'll need to be well prepared, and that goes well beyond your financial planning. Each week, your host, Joe Casey, is inviting you into conversations with his guests to bring you insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to design your new life, a life you'll build around what matters most to you and on your own terms. Let's get started.
This is a topic I've been really looking forward to covering. My wife and I just became grandparents 8 weeks ago. So that puts me in month two of the first semester of my freshman year as a grandparent. So right now, it's tons of fun, and I have undoubtedly a lot to learn. Our guest today is the co-author of the new book, The Mindful Grandparent, The Art of Loving Our Children's Children, Shirley Showalter. Shirley is an award-winning educator, author, speaker, and grandmother. With a PhD from the University of Texas at Austin, she served as a professor and then president of Goshen College in Indiana and as a foundation executive at the Fetzer Institute in Michigan. She joins us today from Pennsylvania.
Shirley, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
I am delighted to be here, Joe. Thank you for having me.
So it's a topic I've been looking forward to covering for quite some time and waited until it was relevant to me, but here we are. So your book points out that there's no school you can go to for becoming a grandparent. What are the keys to becoming a mindful grandparent?
Well, first of all, just paying attention to the wonderful opportunity we've been given when that little bundle of joy arrives in the world, and simply taking the time to foster and hold all of our relationships, the relationship with the child, the relationship with the parent, the relationship with the in-law, and the other grandparents. Those are the primary ones. But then that you will discover that other grandparents love to talk about grandparenting. And so you will have experts all around you. All you need to do is describe what's happening to you in your first bliss of having the child in your life, and you will discover lots of good experiences. People will give you advice, and you can take it or leave it. But you will probably learn a lot from other grandparents. And now we actually have books. We have resources. I am amazed at what has happened just since my co-author Marilyn and I started this process of writing, first proposing the book and then writing. Lots of things are being written. We have websites. There's a magazine called Grand Magazine. And that's a wonderful resource, and it's free. It's online. It comes, I think, quarterly, and it has lots and lots of great ideas in it. In that magazine, then you'll learn about all kinds of other people who are writing and offering ideas to grandparents in many different venues. I particularly have enjoyed the work of Linda and Richard Iyer, and they are doing something that might make my statement about no class irrelevant, because they're starting Grandparenting 101. And they intend to put together an overview of the research that's being done, not just on parenting, but on grandparenting. One of the things they say is that we are now, with regard to grandparenting, where we were with parenting back in the 1960s and 70s. Because as you may recall, there was like one book for parents, Dr. Spock, in the 40s, 50s, and into the 60s. In the 70s, maybe a few more started to come out. And now go to your local bookstore and you'll see at least one shelf, maybe three or four shelves of books on parenting. Academics are into it. Celebrities are into it. People who are writing memoirs about parenting. There's all kinds of available resources there. And I think you're going to start seeing the grandparenting shelf get larger also. And of course, we hope our book will be one of those grandparents will turn to, and parents too. This is a three-generational dance. And parents want to know what roles grandparents want to play. And they need to be in conversation with us as grandparents. And we need to understand what they want. So they very well might be interested in books on grandparenting too. And we might be interested in books on parenting. The important thing, yeah, the important thing is not to get our roles confused, but there are many, many resources and there are lots of exciting new things happening. One other one I'll mention is the Gaga Sisterhood by Donnie Davis. It's a group of grandmas who get together online. And if you haven't found any group with in your local area, you can find resources of other grandmas and grandfathers. They actually do include grandfathers from time to time. It's mostly grandmas, though.
So I appreciate the way you put that, a three-generational dance. And while I'm a new grandparent, probably an expert in parenting like all other parents. What are the differences between being a parent and a grandparent?
Well, it's interesting. We have kind of folklore answers to that question. Lots of people say, oh, we get to turn them back to the parents when the visit is over and we get to have the fun and not the responsibility. There's some truth to that, but when we have children in our homes, our grandchildren in our homes, we are responsible for their care. And we also do need to recognize the more important role of complete responsibility for their lives in the hands of the parents. But as a dance, we can add perhaps some of the beat that's underneath the dance so that there's this kind of steady sense that we're there for support. We're there to, yes, have fun and offer some respite to the parents, but we can play that role without being the primary leader of the dance, but we can be the support that runs underneath.
That makes sense. So you have a great list in the book about what good grandparents do. What are a few of those that you'd highlight?
Well, let me go back to that list. And first of all, I'd like to give credit to my co-author, Marilyn, who wrote this list and who is a list maker. She loves to make lists, and her lists are amazing. I have a couple of them on my refrigerator door. She takes any subject that she cares about and starts making lists about that subject. And I think I'll just read a little bit of the list so you get a sense of how she does this, how she frames it up. List: learn about their techno toys and limit them. Trust their capacity for complexity. Model respectful behavior and require it. Take them seriously, laugh at their riddles. So she's showing us the paradoxes of life itself. It's a serious job, and yet laughter is one of the biggest gifts we get from being a grandparent, and we want to encourage it in the grandchildren. I'll also underscore the idea of modeling respectful behavior and then requiring it. Later on in the book, Marilyn talks about the fact that she has actually talked with older grandchildren about the fact that relationship with her is not something that they can choose not to do. It's there. And she expects them to spend some time with her and to respond to her questions and put down their devices at a point when they have the opportunity to have a conversation. So that's a good example of how grandparenting changes over time. And for her, when she started making a list, because she has 9 grandchildren and they range in age from being a baby to being in college, she was thinking about that entire range. When I think about it, I think about my range, which is from nearly 5 to 11. And Joe, I'm sure you're thinking of that wonderful childhood baby stage of life, and they are very different. But the list helps us understand what's important for the long term. And Marilyn talks about not overspending and not overpraising a child. And that's one other thing I would underscore in her list, which is that sometimes it's tempting for both parents and grandparents to overpraise a child. Maybe as children ourselves, we weren't praised very much at all. And so we might have this deficit feeling, like we want to make up for them what we would have maybe enjoyed hearing for ourselves. And some of that is fine. But I read recently a little headline that I'm going to have to investigate further, but I really like the concept, which is that we probably should praise less and appreciate more. And so especially praising children for doing something that ought to be expected of them anyway, setting the table, for example, that's a really great chore for a child. But instead of going into elaborate praise for doing it, we can say, I really appreciate how you contribute to our whole family's well-being by helping in the kitchen. And that's a slight change in emphasis and nuance, but I think it makes a great deal of difference to the child because you're trying to increase the child's sense of responsibility and obligation to the rest of the family while you're appreciating the special gift that child brings.
Makes a lot of sense. And I enjoyed reading that list of what good grandparents do, but it made me think of the opposite and began wondering, what have you noticed that the not quite as good grandparents do that are something to avoid?
Well, I don't want to get into the business of labeling other people's grandparenting because I know we're all doing just the best that we know how to do, and judging others is not what I want to do. But I think possibly by rephrasing the question a little bit, I can help you understand and your readers understand the kinds of things that I value and want to do. And then I have seen examples of things I don't want to do. And now that the book is out, it's just recently been published and I had launches in 2 locations. And I love hearing the questions that people ask at the end of a book talk. And some of the questions people ask indicate to me that they are concerned about the parents' discipline of philosophy and how they're carrying it out. And there could indeed be times when one might even need to have a conversation about something that is either dangerous or looks like it could explode in some really bad way, and you want to make a contribution to the good and not to the bad in a case like that. But most of the time, we should take a secondary role to the parents when it comes to discipline. We can have rules for how people will act in our homes, and we should. And no hitting is a good rule. But when we try to intervene in how the parents discipline, I think we can get into a lot of trouble, not just with the grandchild, but also with the parents. And that relationship with the parents is just critical. They are the gatekeepers to this child, and they are going to do the best they can. And parenting and grandparenting, all these things have changed a lot since we last diapered a baby. So you'll learn about attachment parenting. You'll learn about sleep training. You'll learn about how to swaddle and all these things that were not even things when we were parenting our children. But we can get in real trouble if we say, well, that's not the way I did it. And you grew up fine. And so I think you should do it the way I did it. That kind of know-it-all attitude, I don't think has a role in good grandparenting. I think there's also the temptation of grandparents to spoil the child. And there's even some of that folk wisdom that, that's what we're for. We're here to spoil the grandchildren because the parents are the bad guys and we're the good guys. Parents don't want them to have sugar, but here are some cookies on top of some ice cream on top of some candy, but send them out the door. I guess there are grandparents who act like that, but I don't think it's a good idea. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't offer treats, but we can do it in relationship to something that's a sensible amount and something that the parents understand and approve of while the child is in our home. So spoiling them, either overspending on them, filling them up with sugar, or just trying to smooth everything for them instead of letting them. I, for example, watched my granddaughter running on the concrete sidewalk, and I nearly ran after her to stop her because I was sure she was going to land splat on that pavement. But she didn't. And I'm glad I didn't stop her because we want to protect them from real danger. But if they're going to fall from time to time, and they will, that's part of life. And we shouldn't overprotect. One of the other things that I think of that I want to do that I don't always observe others doing is really taking advantage of the early years. And Joe, you are just in a great spot for this because now is the time you're making investments in a life. And everything, the skin contact you're having now as you kiss the head of that little baby and hold the little baby, that is going to then develop into more and more opportunities to be a major player in that child's life. And the more we can do that when they're young, the more we have invested in the bank to say to them, relationship with me is not optional because we've been relating and we're building a base here that's going to be for my lifetime and hopefully the child's lifetime, but also for after I'm gone. So we have an awareness of time that neither the child nor the grandparents have, but we need to invest in it. And if we're working, sometimes parents are working, grandparents are working, the average age is 50 for a grandparent, and it's not always possible to spend as much time as we'd like. And there's also distance. Those things are hindrances, but they're not ones that are impossible to overcome. And we have to, if we focus on it, if we're mindful, if we actually make it a priority, we can make these early years the ones that will last and be memorable and make a huge difference in how the child's character and values are formed.
You mentioned sleep training, and I've read an article on BBC.com on all the research on sleep training. And it was so long, I fell asleep myself.
Yeah. There's always going to be a new theory, and then there's going to be a counter theory to that theory. And, you know, you end up sometimes just doing the best you can.
That's a good motto. So lifelong learning comes up numerous times in The Mindful Grandparent. Why is lifelong learning important for grandparents and perhaps for the grandchildren as well?
Well, you're talking to an educator, someone who's loved going to school since she was 6 years old and who has been going to school. In fact, I was going to school on the farm when I was growing up, and I have continued loving learning. And once I learn something, I love to teach it. And that's just a natural for me. But I think it can be and certainly is for many other grandparents as well. You don't have to have been a teacher in the classroom in order to know that everything that we can look at with curiosity can teach us something. And the more we examine both the relationship of grandparenting and all the other things around us with children, nature becomes a wonderful place to learn. And if we haven't learned the names of the trees and the names of the flowers and the names of the bugs, maybe it's time that we go back to school and learn those again with the children. And so some things are quite elementary that we learn. Other things are more philosophical research that's been done on the roles of grandparents and parents. That's all a place to learn. But whatever we have discovered that's new, our grandchildren will love to hear about it. And when the circumstance is right for them to share what they learned in school today, they will love telling their stories and the juice that comes from knowing new things can just then accelerate.
There's a point made in the book about the pace of learning, though, to be mindful that it's leisurely, not try to force learning. I thought that was really notable.
Yeah, I think that's the case with all of our interactions. We want there to be energy and joy, and there certainly is, but it should be a gentle form so that it's not overpowering to the child. We can come across as too intrusive in their lives. Our questions can make them wary. They won't even be able to understand why they aren't sure, but they might clam up instead of open up if we don't come into it sometimes from the side or make our conversation starters in the form of questions. That's really Marilyn has a real knack for that. And she helps her grandchildren develop their own ability to ask questions, partly because she's such a great asker of questions herself. And instead of telling you what's new, she can say, have you noticed that the blooming tree outside has been shedding its flowers this morning? And then they'll go into a whole conversation about what kind of tree it is and why flowers are falling down now, but they were budding 2 weeks ago. You can get into it in great detail, but you have to come at it gently and with no sense of overpowering a child's own imagination.
What do grandparents need to know about the team aspect of grandparenting?
Well, I think that's a very important thing. You know, back in 1900, the typical child, let me see, fewer than 50%, I wrote this down because I found it so amazing, fewer than 50% of adolescents had two or more grandparents alive. By 1976, 90% of them had two or more. And I don't know why that source didn't follow up in a more modern statistic, but I'll give you one from my own granddaughter, who's five. She has four living grandparents and two great-grandmothers. One's 100 and the other is 95. So things have expanded the length of time, even, and Lydia is the result of two generations of parents who were latecomers to childbirth. I was 35 when I had my daughter, and she was 35 when she had her daughter. And yet we still have a child with this many people. What a potential for teamwork. And fortunately, we have been able to form a team around Lydia. We happen now to live within 20 miles of each other, the other set of grandparents and us. And the great-grandmothers are living close by as well. And we had to consciously, first of all, joke about being the Lydia team. And then secondly, we had to think about what we could do to offer Lydia a wider palette of opportunity. And so Pops, the other granddad, is a former math professor, and he's great at taking Lydia on scavenger hunts along the creek, and he's teaching her how to count with her finger. And Grammy, the other grandma, is wonderful with music, and she can mesmerize Lydia by playing the Moonlight Sonata on her grand piano in the living room. Neither Stuart nor I could offer Lydia any of that. And we're so excited that we can work together and go to the recitals and be part of a team that contributes who we have been and all that we love doing to this grandchild.
So I wonder if you could please tell us about Grandparent Camp.
Well, Grandparent Camp started at our household about 5 years ago. At the time, our son and his wife were the parents of the two older grandchildren and lived in Montclair, New Jersey. They loved to go on vacations and knew that we enjoyed being with the children. So we arranged for them to bring the children to us and then take off on their own for a week. And I think the children were at that time maybe 7 and 5. So it was a bit of a challenge. They hadn't been away from their parents that long, very frequently, if ever before. So we wanted to make things fun, and we made a little nest for their sleeping bags in the library, and we had a tent over the nest so that we could read the bedtime stories. We did things that they didn't do at home, some fun things, new things, different things. We have a tradition of sitting out on the deck in the mornings, and we were drinking coffee. So we decided the children needed to have equal opportunity, and we made hot chocolate for them, little half cup of hot chocolate with one drop of coffee in it, which we call mocha, and they think is really, really special. So we have little daily fun things to do. And what I did was to ask my friends on Facebook who are in the area, what have you done with your grandchildren when they've been in your home? And I had a list of 20 things, many of those I didn't even know existed in my hometown. And there was more than enough for the week. We had lots of opportunities to visit the factories and go to a farm and pick blueberries and get out with them. We also signed them up for a little art class in the mornings, which gave us a little bit of respite for intensive long days with children and gave them the opportunity to make things. They were used to going to classes and enjoyed it. So that was that experience of grandparenting. We also did a chore chart, which allowed the children to demonstrate their mastery of grandparent camping. And we told them that we would celebrate at the end of the week if they filled out their chart, and they would then have some money to spend at the store, and we would go find things to celebrate their successful grandparent camping experience. And one of the things I remember is that little Owen chose to buy a kite with his money from his chore chart success. And he was out there in the backyard flying the kite. And I said, "Why is this kite the best kite, Owen?" And he just turned around and just total glowing. He said, "Because it's awesome. That's why." Lots of fun.
You sure only had one drop of coffee in that hot chocolate?
Yes, just one. We swore the parents.
So another great idea among many that I noticed in your book I wanted to ask you about, and it has to do with letters. These days, letters are sadly rarely written. But how can letters for later help grandchildren and perhaps grandparents?
This is a chapter in the book that Marilyn wrote because she remembered something from, we both studied American literature, and she remembered a Puritan habit of mothers writing to their unborn children because so many either died in childbirth themselves or had a child that died early. And so they wanted to record their thoughts for the child before the child was even born. That idea made an impression on her. And so she has written letters, and some of her stepchildren, because she's in a blended family, her stepchildren have letters that their mother wrote to them when she was in the process of dying. So there was this tradition that Marilyn was already aware of. And she writes to describe what kinds of things one might put into letters. And why they can be helpful. Because sometimes, well, first of all, letters will last longer than a conversation lasts, and they can leave traces of ourselves on the page. Our handwriting is very distinctive, and this is a gift that a child may not recognize as a gift until later, but will if properly encouraged and if the letter is saved. One other way that letters can play a role in even the daily life of our extended family is that we can choose some date that we want to mark. For example, birthdays are a good time when we can begin a practice of writing letters. I'm trying to think of a way in the upcoming short grandparent camp or cousin camp that I'm anticipating in early June, when all three of our grandchildren will be together. The two who live in Tulsa, Oklahoma will be coming, and we will be having all three of them in our house. And I think instead of a chore chart this time, I think they'll each get a loose leaf notebook with some blank paper in it. And we'll be able to do lots of different things with that notebook. I'm going to maybe suggest that we all write down things we're grateful for and things that make us happy. And so we can do some writing and some pictures around those kinds of things, and we can share them. The idea of a loose leaf notebook that you can put paper in and take paper out. You can put paper from your book into the other person's book. I think that will be fun for the kids. And when I then later write them a letter on their birthdays, I can send it on that lined paper that will go into their three-ring binder. And so we can do all kinds of things with that binder throughout their growing years and even into the teenage years. And there are people who are good at describing the kinds of letters that make lasting impressions on children. And I actually read a blog post about this. My recollection is that you want to talk about things you've noticed about the child and as much detail as possible, and then why it is that you appreciate the thing that you noticed. And then finally, what you wish for them, maybe for this coming year, or maybe even for longer than that, what the kinds of values, the kinds of person you hope they will become. These are things we can share in letter form that possibly are a little harder to talk about in day-to-day activities when we're always tempted to be moving from one activity to the other without reflection. Letters are a chance to be mindful. And if we only write letters, we're probably missing out on other opportunities. By writing a letter, we can take the time, think about it, reflect about it, and offer a gift to a child.
And those of us who are of a certain age remember letters. We actually wrote them back in
yes.
the day. We actually received them, et cetera. So it's a great, great idea. So one last question, if you have time for it. What advice would you offer rookie grandparents like yours truly who are listening?
Well, first of all, just enjoy. It's a marvelous time, and it will not last very long, this early rookie time. And you want to give yourself as much opportunity just to be present and to talk with the children and the in-law child. You also want, I shouldn't say child because they're adults, but our children are always our children. And you want to have, in this stage of life, it's actually good to have a conversation about what you expect of each other, what you hope for each other, what you dream for each other, in the same way that you might write this child to your the letter to your grandchild. You could, if you wanted to, write a letter to your children. And that might be the basis for conversation. You don't need to write a letter. You can just have a conversation. But I think it is important to try to get to the same place of what we expect from each other and how can we help each other. This is not only a wonderful opportunity, this is a great responsibility. And there's never too much love in any child's life. And there's never too much. Well, there might be too much help. If you offer the wrong help at the wrong time, that can be a problem. But most parents are so grateful for the little relief that they can get here and there, and certainly the second honeymoon or the something else that you can make possible for them. So having a conversation with the parents about roles and about hopes and dreams, I think, is important early on. I think that expect that things will change as we move, and then keep learning and growing and reading. That's why we wrote this book, The Mindful Grandparent. We hope that new parents will pick it up and find something in it that's really relevant. We wrote it in 52 short chapters, all of which have suggestions at the end. So we don't want to elaborate at great length. And we recognize that there are so many issues that parents and grandparents will confront. So we wanted to cover as many topics as possible, but also to give you places to go at the end that are beyond the book. Also, we tried to write a book that could be something that one would read through and then go back to and pick up for specific topics that you would remember. Ah, yes, that's in the book. And there are many other books and many other resources as well. My own website has a blog on it. And in there, I have been writing about grandparenting. And for example, Grandparent Camp is one of the subjects on the blog too. So that's another resource beyond the book.
And the chapters are very practical and very inspirational. And if you ever wondered about what Mr. Rogers' secret was, it's in the book as well. So there's lots of things you can refer back to just in time. Shirley, thanks so much for making the time to talk. We've learned a lot from not only the book, but certainly from the conversation, and look forward to putting a lot of these ideas into practice.
Thank you so much.
As you might imagine, I have a long list of notes and takeaways that I created from this conversation with Shirley Showalter, but I'll share three, and hopefully they'll spur your own takeaways, depending on how this topic is relevant to you. Number one, invest in the relationship. Great points that Shirley made about how important these early years are and making the relationship a priority, investing time in not only spending time, but helping to create the character and values that you think are important. Number two, it may not take a village, but it certainly will take a team. I loved Shirley's phrase about this is a three-generational dance that you're entering into, and be aware of that. Know your role, know when to stay in your lane, and know the right type of balancing act that is going to make it useful and valuable for the grandchild and grandchildren, and really get to understand the priorities of the parents and the other grandparents as well. Great point. Takes a team. Number three, learn with your grandchildren. I thought this jumped out at me as really particularly important. A great opportunity and a great way to think of it in terms of keep learning yourself, but also be open to not just being the teacher, quote unquote, but someone who's learning alongside the child. And I think it just sets a whole different tone. And I love her points that she made about her co-author, Marilyn McIntyre, about using conversation starters that are questions to really tap into and continue to cultivate curiosity. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. We publish new episodes every Monday, and twice a month, we will also have bonus episodes that will show up on Thursdays. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out our website, retirementwisdom.com. You can find all of our episodes over five seasons, as well as useful tools like our quiz, which can give you a chance to see how you're doing in preparing for the non-financial side of retirement.
Just one more thing before you take off. Is it time to design your new life after you graduate from the world of full-time work? Go to retirementwisdom.com and schedule a call today with Joe Casey. Working with an experienced coach like Joe can help you explore new possibilities and gain clarity on your future. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. See you next week.